Good morning. I'm Vic Carucci, your host for Cleveland Browns Weekend on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. Get ready for a full hour of Browns conversation, and we have an excellent show in store for you. Along with getting into all that's happening with the Browns OTA practices this week, we're going to tell you about the filming of a movie at the team's facility in Berea. You've probably heard about it by now. It's called Draft Day, starring Kevin Costner, and it's using the Browns as its backdrop. Well, we have the director and producer of the movie, Ivan Reitman. He's going to talk with us about how the film is going so far and give you a little bit of a look at what the movie's all about. You'll also hear from former Browns quarterback Bernie Kosar. He's going to weigh in on the competition that's heating up at the quarterback position thanks to the recent acquisition of Cleveland native Brian Hoyer. Tom Withers, who covers the Browns for the Associated Press, will also be with us to talk about the situation at safety, where the Browns are searching for a starter next to T.J. Ward. Could it be Tashawn Gibson, who's working with the first unit defense in OTA practices, or will it be sixth-round draft pick Jamore Slaughter? We also like to hear from national voices on this show. This morning, we bring you one of the very best at covering the NFL. He's Alex Marvez of FoxSports.com. He has some strong opinions about the Browns quarterback picture that you're going to want to hear. All of that is ahead on Cleveland Browns Weekend on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. And let's get things started this morning with our chat with Ivan Reitman, director and producer of the movie Draft Day.
How's the filming going so far?
Filming's going great. It's been very exciting here in Cleveland. I thought the draft would be very exciting, but it was mostly nervous time because we had to fit in with everything else that was going on, and it was a ton to do in a very short period of time. So that was a real adrenaline rush, and the material that we got was wonderful. And we've already started editing it into some of the dramatic footage that we've been getting. And since then, you know, we've been shooting here for about 2 weeks, and it's been quite fabulous. It's you know, people always say that in the middle of filming, but I'm happy because I have this wonderful group of actors in a script that I know is great. There's a reason that that script was picked as the sort of favorite unproduced screenplay of the last year. It really rocks, and stuff happens, and there's just good dramatic moments all over the place and great comedy all over the place.
So as a movie, because you obviously your film credits include so many highly successful comedies, what would you call this? Is this because this seems to have some serious elements to it as well? Is it a combination?
Yeah, it's a combination. I call this a serious comedy. It's not a comedy in the way Ghostbusters or Animal House or Stripes were comedies. It's more like, in terms of my movies, I would say probably Dave is the closest film that I've done to it. In terms of Kevin Costner, probably Bull Durham, where there's plenty to laugh at, but there's a really serious and realistic story that's being told. And it's really what drew me to this. I love the story. There were things that were funny in the course of what was happening, but it's funny from the situation and the cleverness of the dialogue.
With regard to the fact that you're shooting this in Cleveland and at the Browns facility where we are now, my understanding of this business is that a lot of times you pick locations that are similar to, that have the qualities of the cities or areas in which the movie takes place, the story takes place. Here you're actually filming a movie about the Cleveland Browns in Cleveland. How unusual is that? And give me a sense of why this works.
Well, I think Cleveland is becoming something like my hometown Toronto has become over the years, which is it's sort of a stand-in city for a lot of other cities. And as the film industry sort of grew up and people started going to Ontario, Canada because of certain tax deals, there was a lot of footage in Toronto would stand in for New York and God knows where else. And because the state of Ohio has taken sort of a very aggressive and very positive approach from a filmmaker standpoint,
right.
Towards the sort of tax opportunities for people making films here, you're starting to see Cleveland in particular because it has really so many different locales stand in for a lot of cities. What's great about Draft Day, we're playing Cleveland for Cleveland, and particularly the love of Clevelanders for their sports teams, in particular the Browns.
Why is Kevin Costner the right guy to be the general manager of this team?
Well, he's a wonderful actor, but setting that aside, I think there's You know, he starred in something like four very well-made, well-loved films that have a central sports theme. When you make a film, you always try to get somebody where you believe the truth of what you're watching. It's not some actor doing a part. It's really that person in a kind of really honest, lived-in role. And, you know, Costner can do that. I think he has both the power, the likability, the and the sports sense, you know, an all-American guyness that I think is very important for the role of Sonny Weaver, the general manager of the Cleveland Browns.
And lastly, I know you had an opportunity to visit with Jimmy Haslam, the owner of the Browns. I know all of the Browns hierarchy have been great in terms of giving you all the leeway you need. I mean, is that also another factor here? And can you just talk about how the club has cooperated with the production?
Yeah, we couldn't make this film without the cooperation, of course, first the NFL and in particular the Cleveland Browns. You know, we're all over the place. It's the movie's intimately involved with them and requires, the reality of the settings of the players. The Browns organization has been remarkable. I mean, we're sitting right now in the field house, the interior field house, where we did an extraordinary scene just yesterday, and we've got another big one on Friday night, which represents the draft party, you know, that the Browns themselves throw the evening of the first round. And, we've used every of the major, you know, the training rooms, the meeting rooms, and I just want to thank, you know, publicly the extraordinary cooperation that we've gotten from the team.
Art imitating life. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This is Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
He is Alex Marvez from FoxSports.com. Alex, I want to talk about the Browns quarterback situation because it's just a topic that never goes away, and you can never get enough of this. I think that's kind of the tone here in Cleveland. And the biggest part of the story is the competition that Brandon Whedon is supposed to be facing. The addition of Brian Hoyer raised a lot of questions about whether this is really ramping things up. In truth, Hoyer's here to compete for a backup job, but I get the idea in general that the Browns hierarchy wants Brandon Whedon to feel that sense of urgency and pressure, and he's riding with it.
Yeah, you're right, and he has to. He has no choice. I mean, this is it for Brandon Whedon. I mean, you're talking about maybe even an NFL career here in terms of being a starter or potentially having to go to another team as a backup. And I'm not exaggerating when I tell you this. I can go back to the 2007-2008 Miami Dolphins and give you an example. 2007 Miami Dolphins were run by Cam Cameron as head coach and Randy Mueller as GM. They made an investment in John Beck as their quarterback. They used a second-round pick on him. Well, first year comes and goes. Everyone gets fired. John Beck gets inherited by Tony Sperano, Jeff Ireland, and Bill Parcells. They don't see anywhere near the same level of talent. They weren't big on the kid. Ends up John Beck getting railed out of Miami in a pretty quick fashion and never was able to really get any traction to his NFL career. Well, unfortunately for Brandon Whedon, he was drafted by an administration that all got fired. And now you have new people in. I think it's pretty obvious. Mike Lombardi's been on the record with all the shots that he took at Brandon Whedon around the 2012 draft. And it's obvious by signing a player like Brian Hoyer, to me, this is the type of sign that I know that on the surface they say, oh yeah, Brian Hoyer's competing for a backup spot. I don't necessarily look at it like this. I really look at it like they will have a very short hook with Brandon Whedon. And if Jason Campbell can get the job done, then Brian Hoyer is going to get his shot. And I say this because, Vic, you look around the league, and I can't think of any team off the top of my head that has two veteran backup quarterbacks. It's always a veteran quarterback as a backup in most cases, and then you have a young player that you're trying to develop. Why you would bring in a Brian Hoyer after you sign Jason Campbell to a contract that has some guaranteed cash in it? Well, that to me speaks volumes more about Brandon Whedon than it does about Jason Campbell.
Well, let's talk about Hoyer then and what he brings to the table. He's a Cleveland guy, a Michigan State guy, but hasn't really, for the years that he's been in the league, hasn't really had much time on the field. So what are the qualities that you think, if he is in the mix to go with your line about a short hook to get in there, what would he bring?
That's a great question, because how much Brian Hoyer have I seen? But I was very surprised when they went ahead and released him last offseason. I was more surprised that no team signed Brian Hoyer until the Arizona Cardinals in December. So clearly, some people out there think there is a flaw in his game. But I will tell you this. Mike Lombardi knows Bill Belichick, knows him well, worked for him. I am assuming here, which can make an ass out of you and me, as we know, Vic, but the reality is that I really believe that in this case, Mike Lombardi may just have talked to Bill, said, look, what are this guy's skill sets? What can he do well? And maybe got a real glowing report about that. And, you know, the good thing for the Browns, it didn't cost any draft picks, because there was talk about a potential draft trade of the Arizona Cardinals potentially trying to move Brian Hoyer to the Cleveland Browns around draft time. And you also obviously heard the talk about Ryan Mallett as well. Right. So at least in this case, it's a two-year contract. I'm sure it's not breaking the bank for the Browns with the money that they're paying Brian Hoyer. But there's something that the Browns' new administration has seen in Brian Hoyer that makes them believe that he can be a competitive player for them.
Alex Marvez from FoxSports.com is joining us. These are only OTA workouts, so very limited discussion as far as what you take away that means something. But Devon Best really seems like a spark plug. I'm watching this guy out there in the short amount of time that he's practiced this past week. And, of course, we're going to see more OTAs this week and next week on the field. Alex, he is just getting open consistently and catching everything that comes his way.
Yep, he is such a great addition to this Cleveland Browns wide receiver corps. Absolutely an outstanding pickup by the Cleveland Browns. Look, he's not the fastest guy, okay? I get that. But you know what? He runs very precise routes. He is great in the slot. And you're right, he's so reliable. I mean, that's one of the great things about Devon Best. He's not dropping balls. Now, one of the surprises to me is why he didn't fit in with this Miami Dolphins offensive system. I mean, it wasn't like they were so rich in talent at wide receiver last year that this guy couldn't have put up better numbers. I'm not sure if he just wasn't a system fit. Maybe he didn't hit it off with the coaches. Maybe the coaches had a poor perception of him. I understand that in December they got sour on Devon Best because he had suffered an injury and he wasn't coming back on the field very quickly, and there were some questions about how much he was efforting to get back on the field, which I think is really unfair, but that's some of the behind-the-scenes talk about Devon Best. But I think this was a great move for the Cleveland Browns. I mean, look, I'm tired of Greg Little dropping passes. I really am. I hope the young man is able to hold on to the football, but you know, you need to have reliable people. Josh Gordon, you know he's reliable. Now Devon Best, he is going to become a great friend of Brandon Weeden or whoever it is under quarterback that's coming in to play. I just think it was an outstanding pickup. And a guy who's been there and done that too, had a great veteran presence to your locker room. I love that acquisition.
You brought up Little, and you brought up basically the youth of this receiving core. Do you see Best's presence, because it seems like he's taking to this leadership role right away and imparting his knowledge on these younger guys just from what you can gather. But your experiences being around him and knowing that Dolphin team that he was on, can he really be the guy that, say, helps a guy like Greg Little become more consistent with his hands?
He can. I mean, he can offer tips. I mean, it's going to ultimately be on Greg, right? I mean, it's because it's physically he has all the skill in the world. I mean, it's just a matter of concentration and things like that. And, you know, maybe there's some tips that he'll see something and he'll pass them along. I think that's what Devon wants to do. You know, and remember, this is a guy who's always been very humble about his NFL success. He was not drafted, despite a great college career at the University of Hawaii. And the reason he wasn't drafted, he didn't run well at the combine. People thought he was too slow. He's got football speed. So that's the thing about Devon, and I think that he will try to help those around him. I mean, from all indications, he's been a great teammate. I just think that in South Florida, they want, you know, again, you see the sea change that happens, and Vic, it's so common up in Cleveland as well. Fans have seen it through the years. You get new people in. They look at the talent that they're inheriting differently. I mean, the Dolphins made this huge investment in the wide receiver position with Mike Wallace, with Brandon Gibson. Something had to go. They had re-signed Brian Hartline to a big money contract. I mean, those are three highly paid wide receivers right there. Devon Best had become a fourth option for them, not to mention the fact that the Dolphins signed a Dustin Keller. So he became available. It was just a great marriage between those two. And trust me, the guy will do a great job.
Well, you've done a great job, and you always do. We appreciate you taking the time for us, Alex.
Hey, thanks, Vic.
I'm Josh Sabo, 2020 Sports. Coming up next on Browns Weekend, former Browns quarterback Bernie Kosar on 92.3
The Fan. 92.3
The Fan!
Now, back to more of Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
Bernie, so many topics to get to. Let's start with the competition that has been ramped up, I guess, at quarterback, or at least that's the perception. The Browns bringing in Brian Hoyer. And the idea, I guess, is to obviously say that it's more competitive because you've got this guy with experience there. But as I look at it, My initial sense and feeling, just given his physical makeup and the differences in him physically from Brandon Weeden, from Jason Campbell. I don't see a guy necessarily who looks like a true fit as a starter, but I do think his experience would be an advantage as a backup.
Well, if you look at the statistics over the last 3 to 4 years, an inordinate amount of quarterbacks have been starting, almost 60-plus quarterbacks start an NFL game every year. So to have experienced backups, I think, is essential in the league. And although Brian's come in, he's had some spent a good amount of time of his career with Bill Belichick in New England, backing up Tom Brady. That type of depth, that type of competition, that type of veteran experience is something I think brings the best out of not only your offense and your team, but at the quarterback position. So, you know, realistically, is it something that we're going to see him starting on game one opening day without injuries to the quarterback position? Probably not. But he's been around the league a lot. This offense is very conducive for a quarterback to shine if he knows how to get the ball vertically down the field, and anything could happen in this type of system with a new system, with new coaches, and with quarterbacks that are vying to be in the league, that are vying to stay in the league. And I think more realistically, it would be somewhat of a competition for that backup spot.
Bernie, give me a sense of the psyche of the starting quarterback or the incumbent starter when you get these shots across your bow, when they bring in Jason Campbell and now Brian Hoyer after the draft, and when there was so much talk before the draft about the potential of drafting a quarterback, adding a quarterback, or acquiring one in trade or something. So they go ahead and get the guy afterward, and Brandon Weeden, for his part, says that he's saying all the right things. He says that it's his job and he's not looking over his shoulder, and he's got to have the mindset and focus that he's the man. And I get that drift that he means what he says, Bernie, but what is the psyche when these shots across the bow are going on?
Well, it's a heck of a lot easier to handle shots across the bow when you've won some division championships, once been in the Pro Bowls, won some playoff games. So the mindset and things that Brandon is saying are the right, perfect things to say. Now, in his deep thoughts at night when you're alone, do you debate some of these things? You have to. You just have to. Till you've had unquestioned success in the league, and success is defined by winning games and winning a lot of games, it's hard not to think about this stuff. But I do think what he's saying in his mindset is absolutely the right way to look at it. You have to work within your own self. You have to work within your own God-given gifts. And then you're the one that when you have a chance, you have to make the right decisions, the right reads. You have to make the right plays. And if you're just focusing on yourself getting better, that thing gives you the best chance. If you start kind of branching out into what this guy's doing or that guy's doing and how the competition is, and you start worrying about what other quarterbacks are doing, I think you kind of lend yourself to lose your focus, lose your concentration, and then in turn, don't make the plays that you need to make in order to be the man.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. It's about performance over what is said, and I think Weeden also understands that. He's got to show it, and you're right, he doesn't have those credentials to really back anything up. It's all on him to take this, and this is it. This is really his last opportunity to make it happen, I think, this season, right? It's kind of a do-or-die opportunity as a starter, as a viable member of this National Football League.
Well, first and foremost, it's one of the most beautiful things about the NFL. It's not easy to do. It's not easy to get to the promised land with it, but it is black and white. It is incredibly easy to judge. You either make the play or you don't. You make the completion or you don't. You win or you lose. It's incredibly well defined in terms of you can't talk your way out of performance. You have to make your performance. And for right or wrong, in the mid-80s, again, when I was coming into the league, you had time, you had opportunity to develop with a few years under your belt to develop into a quarterback. Like with head coaches, same with quarterbacks. You don't have 3, 4, 5 years now to prove your worth, prove your mettle in terms of being the man, being the starting quarterback. So this is his second year. whether it's fair or not, given his age, he probably has to make it happen this year if he wants to be a top-tier starting quarterback in the league.
The other thing is, as these off-season workouts go, and we can hear from the coaches that it's all about teaching more than it is about evaluation, but I have to believe the evaluating will begin in earnest once Brian Hoyer is on the field. I think it's already been underway to a great extent these past few days that they've had practices, and it resumes, the OTA practices resume tomorrow through Thursday. I think some hard judgments are being made about where these guys are, and that includes Brandon Whedon, how well they're grasping the offense and so forth. And so the teaching is happening, but there's some real evaluation happening too.
Well, there's no doubt about it. I mean, there's no question there's a lot of teaching going on. And I think they're being evaluated as to how they are able to assess and take in that teaching. And it's one thing to sit in a room, sit in a board, go up on the board and draw up the plays, the concepts, the reads, to see if they're able to understand what the teaching just was. It's a whole other thing to go out and do it on the field and have the physical ability and the timing to make these plays in the off season, in these OTAs, and then in training camp. Then it's a whole other thing that we can't really get to until it's live in these preseason games, that to see if they were able to handle the teaching, able to put it in practical use on the field, and then put it in practical use and execute it under live conditions. And again, I say this a lot of times in jest, but under the threat of death, under the threat of a D lineman running you over, can you execute the teaching and make the plays with the D lineman bearing down on you?
Bernie, another part of this too is how the receivers respond with these quarterbacks and what they mean to the passing game and how much they can get more out of Brandon Whedon or whoever is starting a quarterback for the Browns by being the productive and just a better group than they are. And I think there's reason for hope, and it starts, in my mind, the most pivotal guy right now is Devon Best, coming in as a slot guy. And even though this offense is so defined by the perimeter big guys who are explosive and athletic, and Devon is a smaller guy, but Bernie, you watch him in these OTAs, he is consistently getting open, he is catching everything that comes his way, and I think he's setting a really good standard for Josh Gordon and Greg Little.
Well, I think he's not only setting a very good standard, a very good example. I've met him down in Florida. I've watched him play for quite a few years. I met him up at the with Norv, already looking at film, understanding the offense. He has that knack for getting open. More importantly, he has that knack for getting open, catching the ball, and getting past the first down stakes to keep the chains moving. No doubt about it. You know, I spent Saturday night with Josh Gordon down at the arena game. Him and Greg Little come into their second and third years, respectively. I think will help also open up that outside and inside for each other. And they're going to play off each other, these three guys. And again, not to put it all on the quarterback, but the quarterback position to make the plays and make the throws to get it to these guys. Because with Devon Best handling the middle of the field, being able to move the sticks and create first downs, then the big, fast receivers with incredible athleticism that Greg Little and Josh Gordon have, it really, really makes it, given especially this offensive system with Norv Turner and Coach Chudd, a really great chance of success. And I like to think, and from what I watched at the end of the year and what I see spending the night with Josh Gordon, that he has that ability to even raise his game even more so and learn and make that big jump that you hear us talk about a lot from rookie season to year two.
And Bernie, the slot guy in this offense, how much does he do to help enhance the opportunities for the perimeter people?
Well, the slot guy, when he is capable of consistently getting open and making the plays that create movement of the sticks, create the first downs, that brings that extra guy into the box. That takes that extra guy into double coverage, playing in and out technique on Devon Best, on the slot receiver. Of course, you can't double cover everybody. That leaves the outside guys, at least one of them, sometimes two, for single coverage. And again, it's one of my core principles of offense, quarterbacking, and especially wide receivers. Thou must always beat man coverage. Thou must always be able to get open when you're single covered, and that success inside allows those outside guys to get more single coverage.
And Bernie, you mentioned Josh Gordon, and he has been so impressive in these workouts as well. First, just looking at him, again, physically, bigger, stronger guy, especially in his arms, and he just seems so much more explosive athletically than what we saw, not just last summer when he got here out of shape, but even at, I think, the better points when he was getting into his groove during the season. He looks like he has come into this thing with the right frame of mind, take full advantage of all this offseason work he's getting. And you said you had the opportunity to talk with him and kind of see what's in his head. But I think physically, we're going to see a different Josh Gordon.
Oh, absolutely. Look, even people who want to say he was out of shape, he was out of shape by top-tier NFL wide receivers
right. Shape.
He still wasn't. It wasn't the worst thing that God's ever created out there. So his confidence in terms of knowing what to expect, been there last year, done that. He's not the rookie who gets all the typical rookie jokes that are going in. He's comfortable with his surroundings, but more so, he had a college career where he didn't play a lot of games. He got a good, solid, full season in last year, and coming into his second year, he's going to definitely, I feel, be able to build upon that and create more plays down the field, more separation in the passing game. And I think people over time are going to be afraid to cover him one-on-one in crunch time crucial situations.
Yeah, I just picturing that is so cool. Just to think about what that'll mean to this passing game. And I also think Greg Little is in this conversation because the more if we think Bess is going to do the things you described and what we think the impact will be as a veteran leader as well, and then Josh Gordon being Josh Gordon, I would have to imagine that Little will feel that urgency, that need to be everything he can be as a top receiver. As a top flight receiver, he'll be a number two receiver, but as a top flight kind of performer.
Well, there's no doubt the competition within the young receivers category is something that I think will or should bring out the betterment, the better part of their play, of their physical athleticism. I'm not sure Greg Little's quite resigned himself to the fact that he is the number two receiver. I think he still believes, as he should, that he has the ability and athleticism to be a number one receiver, especially given that his time at North Carolina, the early part was spent mostly at running back. He missed his last year playing because of the situations in North Carolina. So he now should be getting into a groove. And again, last year's offense, not to keep throwing daggers at it, but all those crossing routes and little short throws that Greg Little had to run a lot of isn't really, I think, conducive to some of the things I think he could do good down the field, beating man coverage outside. So I think that competition, that new coaching staff, this different system is going to allow itself for both of those receivers to try to compete at the high level to be the number one guy, be the main playmaker down the field and getting the ball in the end zone.
And as the quarterback, as the consummate quarterback, you want that. You want all of your receivers thinking they're the number one guy.
Absolutely. I mean, that was the funny part again, not to keep going back to when I played, but the way guys thought in crunch time, they were the guys that should be getting the ball. It brings out the best in everybody.
Bernie, thank you so much. We'll talk with you next time.
Sounds great.
I'm Josh Sabo, 2020 Sports, coming up next on Browns Weekend. Tom Withers of the Associated Press joins Vic Carucci on 92.3 The Fan.
92.3 The Fan.
You are listening to Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
Tom Withers covers the Browns for the Associated Press. Let's talk, first of all, about the safety position. Interesting competition going on there. The announcement that Eric Hag has been waived tells us probably that the Browns feel Jamoris Slaughter, one of their draft choices, who's coming back from an Achilles injury, sixth-round pick from Notre Dame, is going to probably get back and on the field on schedule, at least in terms of a recovery from a long-term injury. But he did suffer it early in the season last year, so that's encouraging for them. And right now, Tayshawn Gibson, undrafted free agent last year, is lining up next to T.J. Ward. So they must feel good about what they see.
Yeah, I agree with you, Vic. I feel bad for Eric Hag. You know, nice guy, had some injury problems. I thought there was some promise for him at one point. Just didn't work out, and, you know, hopefully he can catch on somewhere else. But, yeah, I agree with you. I think it says a lot that, Ray Horton must see something in that position, that he's got a little bit of depth there. I thought the move of Johnson Bademosi from cornerback over to safety was kind of interesting. It would definitely caught everybody's eye last week during the one day we were out there for a media session. Nice football player. You know, he's a kid that obviously has a nose for the ball, obviously fearless. You know, he played incredibly well in special teams next year, and I'm sure that's going to be his primary role this year. But, interesting to see him then in kind of a backup role. And then to me last week, also, Vic, you know, seeing T.J. Ward being used maybe a little bit closer to the line of scrimmage than we've seen him in the past, and I think that, you know, falls into what Ray Horton has told us since day one since he got here, that this is going to be an attacking defense that's going to take some chances and really force the issue.
Yeah, the safety is a big part of this attack approach, Tom, and you can see it on the practice field. Again, no contact going on, but you can see where he lines up, and you can see how many times he's asked to go after the quarterback. You know, this is something that, number one, is a big component of what that Steeler 3-4 has been all about with Dick LeBeau, right? Troy Polamalu. Think Troy Polamalu.
Absolutely.
And you can see that, and you can also see how much TJ is embracing it. And physically, this is a good fit for him, too.
Boy, this is what he wants to do, and you took the words right out of my mouth. This is exactly what the Steelers have done with Polamalu over the last couple of years, is creep him up to the line of scrimmage, make sure that quarterback is aware of where that safety's at, and, you know, good things are going to happen. This is going to be a defense that is going to go after the quarterback, that is not going to be afraid to take a couple risks here and there. And to your point about TJ, I think you're right on the money. I think TJ is, you know, he's that heat-seeking missile out there who wants to hit anything and anybody that's in his way and go after the ball carrier when he can. And, he might not be the best coverage guy, but that's not what you're counting on him for. You're counting on him to be that guy to come up and stick his nose in the hole when he needs to and make some plays.
Yeah, and back to the point of competition at that other safety spot. Mm-hmm. So I think Tayshawn Gibson, based on what he showed last year, makes himself a very viable candidate. And I think the fact that this coaching staff, that Ray Horton, and you go right down the line, Louis Choffey, the defensive backs coach, and, of course, obviously the head coach, Rob Jedzinski, seeing something that the previous coaching staff, Pat Shurmur, saw too, that to bring a guy like that as an undrafted player who got some prominent time last year and certainly was around the ball, showed good instincts, to trust to put him back into it this year says a lot about Gibson.
Yeah, he's one of those guys, Vic, and they always use that expression, guys who flash out there. And I know even during some of the short times that we were out there as a media contingent watching practice, you know, the kid was making plays. And then you'd think to yourself, well, maybe he ought to be on the field this week. So there'd be weeks that would come and go where we would expect him to be active, and his role grew a little bit. They had a couple, you know, nicks and injuries here and there that got him a little bit extra time. But, yeah, I think he's a kid that showed a lot of promise.
And another guy, and again, we've talked about the conversion from cornerback to safety for Johnson Bademosi. I think this is a really good move and gives this guy a chance, number one, to probably have a longer NFL career than he might have as a corner. I think that the fact is that as a corner, he probably wasn't a really good fit. And frankly, what he did last year was mostly show up as a special teams player and one of the better ones really in the league. He emerged.
He was terrific, wasn't he? Very, and a good
they loved
kid
him
too.
Yeah,
and he was a kid that I really felt like, you know, nationally, I didn't really get a chance to write much of a story about him, but he's got an interesting story, you know, and he played on the national rugby team as a junior, and he's really kind of, you know, earned his way up, you know, through the ranks here, you know, went to Stanford, very bright kid. So I'm real happy for him. He, you know, good for him.
Yeah, I think just seeing him in the mix, we'll see what Slaughter is all about. I do think overall that when you really size it up, the safety position might not be in such bad shape. I think there was a lot of concern, you know, before the draft. Are the Browns going to – how are they going to address this? And did they sufficiently address it with Slaughter? But I think Slaughter could be okay.
Yeah, they definitely did address it. And like you said earlier, I think this is good news in that Achilles injury. And he is, you know, pretty far removed from that now, is obviously healing at a satisfactory level to the Browns and to their doctors. And so, yeah, it'll be interesting to see him on the field probably sooner than later.
Yeah, and another thing about Slaughter, too, is one of the early signings of the Browns draft pick. So getting him under contract, I think, also helps the process along. And looking at when you talk about other moves that this team has made, Brandon Jackson coming back to this team, yeah. Right? And now sizing up the position at running back, Tom, mm-hmm. when we try to figure out how this team is going to configure its backfield, and people have asked this question repeatedly, and I'm sure of you as well, fullback, 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 where's the fullback? And it just seems like the comfort level is you take a Chris Obanaya and you take a Brandon Jackson and you have guys like that that can do multiple things, not just run the ball, but also right. be effective when it comes to blocking, picking up the blitz, and catching the football.
Yeah, you and I have talked about this before. I mean, I think people still get hung up in the, you know, the traditional sense of what a fullback is supposed to mean on an NFL team, and that's, you know, the burly guy who's lined up in front of the tailback, who's going to lead the runner into the hole, and that's just not the way it works anymore in the new NFL. So you've got, you know, more versatile type players who also can, you know, can carry the ball inside the tackles when you need them to, but also guys who can get out on the edge, get into some mismatch situations, and make some things happen.
Yeah, and I think that's really the key to how this backfield will look. And it probably, again, most important of all is blitz pickup. You've got to protect that quarterback.
And yeah,
Trent, I hope that Trent Richardson moves forward in that department. But you don't. You got to trust it to guys who you know can do it.
That's just what I was going to say, Vic. That was something he really struggled with last year, and it's something that, you know, he struggled with at times at Alabama. There was no secret about that. So, and it's a very different kind of beast, if you will, in the NFL. So you hope that he's going to get better at it. And I, you know, we saw last year that Obanaya is just terrific at that. And I'm glad to see Brandon Jackson back. I was a little perplexed at times as to why he really was basically, you know, I don't know if he got into the doghouse or whatever had happened. But then he showed a nice little burst, and obviously he had some fresh legs in that season finale against Pittsburgh, but I'm glad to see him back because I think he can be a versatile player for them.
Tom Withers from the Associated Press covers the Browns. Tom, of course, there would be no conversation that we have on this show that I have with almost anybody on this show. would it be complete without some reference to the quarterback situation? And the latest, of course, is how the Browns have, I guess, at least seemingly ramped up the competition for Brandon Whedon, adding
right.
Brian Hoyer to the roster now, in addition to having Jason Campbell there, in addition to having Thad Lewis there. So it's four quarterbacks. It's a battle that's going to go on. I don't know, you know, how intense this will become, but just
right.
the mere fact that this move was made, the Hoyer addition was made now, the timing of it
yeah.
is at least curious.
Yeah, a little bit. I don't really read that too much into it. I just feel like, you know, this coaching staff, you know, has learned its lessons through the year, and that is that you cannot have enough quality guys there. And, hey, we saw it last year. I mean, the Browns were reduced to using their third stringer, and the year before that, the third stringer ended up starting the most games for the team. So, yeah, I think, you know, the Hoyer addition is a quality player who's had, his fair share of NFL snaps. He's more than a serviceable backup. He comes in, he's now going to make, you know, Whedon and Campbell work that much harder. But as you and I have talked about before, Vic, I still think it's about Brandon Whedon. It's about his development. It's about him gaining the trust of this coaching staff. And from what I understand, he's doing everything on point to this point and showing them that not only does he want to be the guy this next year, that he is going to be the guy this next year.
Yeah, I would go along with that. And I think if these are tests, and I'm not sure that they're necessarily specifically designed to mm-hmm. be things that mess with his head, because I don't know that that's really the way you want to coach. You want to
right.
you want to challenge and you want to push guys.
But
I would say this. This is part of the development too. If he can withstand, as he more than definitely should be able to do this as an older guy. This
mm-hmm.
is where being nearly 30, this is where having been in professional baseball should show itself in his personality that, hey, I'm a pro, and pros don't get flustered over this kind of thing.
Well, exactly right, particularly at that position. You know, you have to have, you know, nerves of steel and the cannon arm and all the attributes that go along with being a star quarterback in this league. So, yeah, I think you're right. I think it's just this coaching staff's way of, you know, just intensifying the fire under him a little bit. You know, let's see what you got. You know, are you our guy? And if you are, show us you're the guy. And I really think the way Brandon has handled all of this over the off season has been, you know, very mature, number one. You know, there was talk last year that he might not have been the hardest worker. Now, I'm not saying that. That got thrown out there, you know, in various places. But from what I understand, he's been, you know, studying the playbook in the classroom, doing everything he can to show them that he can be the starting quarterback on this team for this year and several years going forward. So I thought he said all the right things last week. I thought he looked better on the field. He didn't have a great day throwing the day we were out there to see them. And from what I understand, and not only talking to Brandon, but in talking to some other people, including some players, said he was really winging it the first two days out there. And, you know, he looks quicker. And Vic, you know, we haven't talked about this yet, but boy, that tempo that they're practicing with right now is, you better be on your toes when you get out there because things are moving quickly.
There's no doubt, and I saw more evidence of that today. I think it's actually increasing, and I think when everyone gets out from a media standpoint on Thursday and looks at that practice compared to what we saw a week earlier, I think it will be noticeable because there's more that's been downloaded by now by these players. There's been more installation and more understanding, and I think it stands to reason that they were getting early kind of tastes of things last week. It was really the first few phases of offensive install. Now you get to this week, and I think it's going to be more progressive and deeper, and by the nature of it all, it should move quicker on the field.
It should be, and it sounds like I better lace up my sneakers a little bit tighter.
You might want to do that. Hey, Tom, I appreciate it.
Vic, nice talking to you.
I'm Vic Carucci, and I want to thank you so much for joining us on Cleveland Browns Weekend on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. I want to remind you to catch us at the same time next Saturday morning, and don't forget to follow me on Twitter at VICCARUCCI, and check out my blog, Carucci's Call, presented by Rebel Wireless, throughout the week on clevelandbrowns.com.